Street took another nosedive Thursday, one day after suffering the biggest drop in months. The Dow has now shed over 1,300 points in just two sessions. The tech-heavy NASDAQ at one point Thursday, tumbling 10% from its August closing high, falling into what is known on Wall Street as a correction.
The world's longest commercial flight is back in action. The 19-hour ultra-long-haul non-stop Singapore Airlines marathon from Singapore to New York. The first flight taking off on Thursday after 5 years out of action. It's going to be a major boost for the Asian airline, which is about to have its biggest U.S. footprint ever.
Luis Eduardo Magalhães, a farming community in northeastern Brazil, is booming. Luxury apartments are going up, car dealerships are bustling, and more people are moving to the once rural area surrounded by farms. Fueling the growth, sudden strength in Brazil's agricultural industry, which is riding high as China increasingly turns its back on the U.S. in the midst of a nasty trade war.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's October 12th. And it's 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us on another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway, albeit a chilly start to the day with the frost in some places around the Chicago area. It is that time of the year again. Some good news finally on Wall Street this morning. We'll get into the numbers momentarily. We'll also have Paul Nolte here today from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul will talk to us a little bit about our portfolios. The big sell-off on Wall Street this week, whether or not we should buy or sell or run for the hills. He'll be up first this morning. And then second in the program today, we'll talk about ATM surcharges going up. Greg McBride from Bankrate.com will be here. Whether or not these are record ATMs, you'll have to wait till about 5:40 to hear that. ATM fees to hear that this morning with Greg in today for Brian Summers, who's off this week. So we'll get to all of that coming up. First, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street, with Dow futures up almost 0.75%, up 180 points. NASDAQ futures up about 102, that's almost 1.5%. S&P futures are up almost 0.75% as well, about 24 points. After a couple of rough days on Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrials off 545 points, down more than 2%. The S&P down 2%, the NASDAQ down 1.25%. Around the globe this morning, markets are generally positive in Asia, with the Nikkei ending the day up about 0.5%. The Hang Seng up more than 2%, the Shanghai up about 1%. And in Europe this morning, markets also in the green, with the FTSE in London up 0.75%, the DAX up about 0.5%, and the CAC up about 0.5% as well. Futures are at oil futures at $71.63 a barrel, up about 66 cents. A couple of quick headlines before we get going this morning. China says it is in communication with the United States amid reports of a planned meeting between the president of China and President Trump next month following a dive in the stock market, blamed partly on the growing trade war between the two countries. Foreign Ministry spokesman for China had no specifics about the meeting, saying only that China had noted that reports was in communication on dialogue and exchanges at all levels with the U.S. government. The reported meeting would take place during the G20 summit in Argentina, coming in late November. British billionaire Richard Branson has frozen business links with Saudi Arabia amid reports that journalist Jamal Khashoggi may have been murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Branson says that if reports are true, it would clearly change the ability of any of us in the West to do business with the Saudi government. There's a big media conference also going on in Saudi Arabia, and some of the big players in that conference, media organizations, pulled out because of the handling of this case by Saudi Arabia. We begin front and center this morning. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is one of our regular Friday guests, and Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
We've made it to Friday finally, and there's a little green on the screen, which makes going into the weekend, if this holds, a little bit better.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of rough days there. A quick analysis from you on what happened.
The market's kind of freaked out. It's similar to what we saw in February, similar to what we saw early in 2016. We get these periods where all of a sudden investors decide to run to the other end of the ship, and selling begets selling. And we saw it really focused in on a lot of the FANG stocks, a lot of the higher flying technology names, which have been doing so well so far this year. Even after the declines of the last couple of days, Amazon is still up 40% for the year. So we've taken some of that money off the table. We've seen some of those losses hit, but it's, I don't think, the end of the world. It was just last week we hit all-time highs, so it's a little bit of a correction here, albeit very painful and very short. But we're viewing it right now as more of a correction than it is the beginning of the end.
I mentioned in one of the opening stories that some experts believe partly it's because of China, the trade war between the two countries. But there's been a lot of talk, too, that this is Fed-driven as well. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, you know, certainly President Trump has come out and been bashing the Fed. And to a certain extent, I think he's got a point in the fact that we've got interest rates up 2 full percentage points inside of 3 years. We've been at zero interest rates for 10 years. And the Fed is been moving pretty aggressively to, quote-unquote, normalize interest rates, normalize their balance sheet. And I think it may be a good thing for them to step back a little bit and allow the increases to work their way through the economy. It usually takes 6 to 9 months for a rate increase to have an impact on the economy. So we've got two in right now that really haven't worked their way into the economy with another one on deck. So it makes sense to me, at least, to step back a little bit, take a quarter off or a few months off, and kind of see the impact before you continue to raise rates.
But all indications are that in December there will be another rate increase. Some Fed speakers who've been out this week, I know yesterday there was one, and on Wednesday another, both suggesting that the course is set and they'll continue on the course of rate hikes.
Yeah, as we talked about before, you know, the Fed has pretty much laid out the roadmap and has followed that roadmap for the last year and a half without really deviating from it. And certainly if you listen to Chair Powell's discussions about the U.S. economy, he's like, this is great. The economy is doing fabulous, a lot better than we thought it would, which gets translated into Wall Street as meaning, yeah, we're going to raise rates, absolutely. And again, you know, the adage on Wall Street is the Fed will raise rates until something breaks. And, you know, maybe some of the dishes are starting to fall off the table right now. So it's, again, we're early days. It's too early to say, yeah, this is the beginning of the end. So, again, step back a little bit and take a deep breath. We'll be fine.
Step back, take a deep breath, maybe even pull some money out to buy some stuff. Are there some buying opportunities?
Oh, there always are in these types of declines, and we've always tried to put together a shopping list of stuff that we'd like to own if the price is right. And certainly these types of days where they start really just selling to sell anything and everything gives you those opportunities. So you can afford to be patient. You don't have to be really aggressive and hurry up and buy stuff. So we've had a little bit of cash on the sidelines. We're not ready to deploy it just yet. But again, that is a good thing to be doing here. So if we draw up the game plan the way we think things will go, this is probably close to a momentum bottom. And then like a ball bouncing, we'll go up a little bit. And probably over the next 6 weeks or so, we'll come back down to this area-ish and then rally from here if things continue to go well in the economy and we maybe get some a little bit of resolution to the U.S.-Chinese situation.
I can hear the audience in my ear saying, ask Paul what's on his list of stocks. If the price were right, what would be some of those?
You know, a lot of the healthcare stocks look good. A lot of the consumer staples, like a Kimberly-Clark, Philip Morris, those types of names have been really left by the wayside as investors really focus on the FANG stocks, the Amazons, et cetera. So you get some of those types of companies that are paying 2% in the way of a dividend yield. They're raising their dividends every year. They've got good cash flow. And a lot of those companies have done relatively poorly over the last year to 2 years in the market as everybody rotates toward technology stocks. So those, I think, are pretty reasonable here. And if the markets don't do well going forward, these are types of companies that no matter what the economy does, you're going to still see very good earnings from.
Paul, our regular Friday guest. Paul, I didn't open my 401k this week. It's probably good, right? I mean, I know some people that did, and they were a little shocked, but how bad is it?
You know, it's not bad. As we've talked about, you want to have both bonds and stocks in the portfolio, and some people have gotten a little concerned because the bond portion of the portfolio did not go up like it usually does in these types of environments. So you lost a little bit of money on bonds, maybe less than a tenth of 1%, and people are getting very nervous by that. But it does provide an offset. I'd rather lose a tenth of a percent than 3-4% in an all equity portfolio. So again, the bond portion of the portfolio has held up well and has done what it's supposed to. So you're down maybe 3% or so from last week, which in a week is a significant amount. But again, take it in the context of the entire year. We're still up for the year. Portfolios are still looking pretty good. International actually held up reasonably well, emerging markets especially. So again, as long as you're not chasing the latest fad and whatever is hot at the moment, whether it's cannabis stocks or if it's the FANG stocks, slow and steady here is really a good way to go with the portfolios, and not get too excited when things are going well, and don't get too depressed when things look like this week.
I often heard, don't look at your portfolio every month, every quarter, I usually do it every couple of months.
We recommend every quarter, take a look, and occasionally tweak some things. Certainly when you had a market last year especially that did so well, your equities are going to be a much bigger percentage of the portfolio because they've grown so much more. And part of the reason why we took some of that money off the table and moved it over to the bond portfolio to take those profits and rebalance your portfolio back to, for example, a 50-50 mix. So after last year, you might have been 55% stocks. Take 5% off of that, bring it back to a 50-50 mix. And you do that on a regular basis, and you're going to do fine over the long run.
Where again do you put that 5%? Have you taken
off? You put it back into the bond portfolio to get back to that 50-50 mix. Okay. And so the other way, you know, on days like today or this last week, you look at the portfolio and say, well, geez, now I'm down to 47% stock. Well, then you sell a little bit of the bond portfolio and use this opportunity to rebalance back into the stock market. That's buying low and sell high when the markets are rallying.
There were a couple of economic reports this week, PPI, a producer price index, and the consumer price index. Any surprises in either of those two?
Not really. When you take a look at inflation, it's one of the things that, you know, everybody's kind of scratching their head about. Inflation is kind of stuck at the 2-2.25% rate, which is really what the Fed target is. But again, we're not seeing those inflationary numbers. We're not seeing the types of things in the economy that would warrant an aggressive Fed. So back to the question earlier, is the Fed kind of the reason for some of this? We're looking at saying, you know, the Fed really shouldn't be raising rates. We're not seeing those inflationary figures. We're at full employment, but the Fed is very interested in normalizing their balance sheet and is creating some of this dislocation, if you will. But the inflation numbers were actually very good and in line with what they've been historically. If you look at core, you look at the median number of inflation, we're still at the 2-2.25% rate. We've been there now for the last couple of years. So the inflation picture from an investor perspective looks pretty good right now.
I saw a tweet yesterday I think went viral by the end of the day. A woman wrote, I don't own or understand stocks. We're a lower middle-class family on a strict paycheck-to-paycheck budget. I budget $35 for gas each day. Today, I paid $45. Last week's grocery bill was $30 higher than we're used to paying. How about you ask me how the economy is? Is that a feeling that there are a lot of people are feeling these days, especially in this part of the country?
Maybe a little bit. And I would caution that, you know, when you take a look at gas prices, you look at the pump price. And we're pushing $3, and we were at $2.50 maybe 6 months, 9 months ago. So you can say, well, gosh, look at that inflation. Or you can go to the grocery store, and what they do take a look at when you do go to the grocery store and say, well, pork prices are way up. they will assume that you're going to substitute chicken or something else for those higher pork prices. So when you take a look at the basket of things that you buy, not just at the grocery store or at the gas station, that basket as a whole really hasn't moved too terribly much. It also depends upon where you're at in your life cycle. So if you've got young kids, obviously your food bill is going to be a lot bigger than after you're retired, but then your medical bills are a lot bigger. So it kind of depends on where you're at and what you're experiencing. Medical prices in general, if you look at the numbers from the government at least, those have been coming down even as health insurance is still going through the roof for a lot of individuals.
Yeah, and I bring this up because you and I have talked before about the hard data versus soft data, and we'll get consumer sentiment report today. So we'll get to kind of get a feeling how people are feeling even more so today.
Yeah, and you know, certainly investors, when you take a look at the sentiment numbers, they've been very bullish on the markets up until this week. The numbers that came out yesterday all of a sudden reversed course. They were 80-90% bullish. Now they're only 50% bullish. So certainly the recent decline in the stock market does have an impact on consumer sentiment. And not to the great degree everybody would think, because again, not everybody's looking at their portfolio every day. But with an economy that's still doing reasonably well, the unemployment at very low levels, and people that are looking for jobs are generally able to find jobs, they feel pretty good about how things are going right at this point.
Paul, anything else that I missed from this week? We covered it all.
Outside of the market falling apart, and having a little bit of a down week. No, actually, like I said, it's one that I think you want to step back from. You don't want to get too wrapped up in the markets here and really be worried that this is the start of something big. It very well could be, but I think we'll have to wait a couple of weeks before we're ready to make that judgment.
Paul, you have calmed me completely. I hope you've done the same with the audience this morning.
Good.
How can people get a hold of you if they want to have this conversation one-on-one?
Yeah, if they want to talk about it a little bit more and talk about their portfolios and certainly maybe be a little less surprised by what happened this week, pnolte@kingsviewam.com is where they can drop me a note.
All right, great. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. Chicago software review platform G2 Crowd announced it's raised $55 million in new funding. The funding comes amid a major evolution for the Chicago startup. It no longer wants to be a place just for business software reviews. It wants to be the platform where companies go to purchase all the business software that they need. And Oak Park-based medical marijuana company PharmaCann is being acquired by LA-based MedMen Enterprises for $682 million. The deal is one of the biggest acquisitions ever in the legal weed industry. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Banks are charging non-customers more than ever before to use their ATMs. This is according to new data collected by Bankrate.com. Joining us this morning from Bankrate is Greg McBride, a chief financial analyst there. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Well, good morning, Steve. It's great to be with you again.
Lovely to have you as well. There's some good news and bad news in this report, isn't there, about bank fees?
Yes, kind of a mixed bag. As you mentioned, the fee that ATM owners charge non-customers up once again. It hit a record high for the 14th consecutive year. On a more favorable note, the other ATM fee, the fee that your bank charges you when you go outside the network, we saw that one ease off a little bit. We are seeing more instances where banks have certain accounts that allow a number of free out-of-network withdrawals every month. So, you know, favorable development in terms of, you know, what banks are doing for their own customers, but nobody's worried about alienating non-customers.
Yeah, it looks like the ATM out-of-network fee is an average of $3.02. Any sense of where Chicago ranks in this data?
when you look at both fees together, you know, Chicago actually has bragging rights, one of the lowest that we found in the 25 markets that we'd surveyed, the third lowest. On average, when you put the two fees together, both the ATM owner surcharge and then what your bank charges you together in Chicago, it's about $4.31. It's about 35 cents or so below the national average. But, you know, rather than, you know, take comfort in that, I would stress avoiding the fees altogether. That's really the main takeaway. The fees do remain completely avoidable. Plan ahead as to where and when you make your withdrawals. If you're really in a pinch for cash, you can get cash back at the point of sale when you go to the supermarket or the drugstore and use your debit card. And, you know, just like medical insurance, Steve, if you go out of network, it's going to cost you a lot more. The key, stay in network. If you stay within your bank's network, you can make those free withdrawals. Look on the bank's website, check their mobile app, find the nearest in-network ATM before you make that withdrawal.
You mentioned the trend here is higher. Every year we see some of these fees, or these fees go higher. Any sense of why that is, or is it just because they can?
Well, the one that goes up every year is the fee that ATM owners charge non-customers. And I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. That one goes up every year because they can. Nobody's worried about alienating non-customers. The other fee that banks charge their own customers, that one goes through cycles, and I've seen it kind of go both ways a few times where, you know, it'll go up for a few years, and then you'll see a little bit more leniency in terms of how many out-of-network transactions you're allowed in a month, or certain accounts that allow free out-of-network transactions. We're kind of working our way back into that one now. So that one kind of yo-yos around a little bit, but the surcharge that's assessed on non-customers, that one, you know, with the, you know, consistency of the sun rising in the east, tends to go up every year.
What is the impact of people not using their ATMs as much as they used to? We did a little survey in the newsroom here yesterday and to see how many people have used their ATMs recently. Kids are just not carrying cash anymore. Does that have anything to do with any of these numbers?
I think it does, yeah. I mean, when you look at that fee that's charged on non-customers, one of the contributing factors is that the cost of maintaining those networks has traditionally been borne by the non-account holders. And as fewer people make ATM transactions and there are fewer out-of-network transactions taking place, that cost is being spread over fewer transactions. So another contributing factor into pushing those fees higher.
I saw in the data, too, that nearly 41% of non-interest checking accounts are now free by default. That's an increase over the past couple of years. That's good news from this survey.
It is. Yeah, I mean, we kind of seen a reversal of that trend as well. You know, for years, you know, following the financial crisis, we actually saw very steady declines in the availability of free checking. It bottomed out a few years ago. Now it's kind of inched its way back up for a few years now. So now up to 41%. And that's, you know, among banks. And that's just on a standalone basis. I mean, if you factor in things like direct deposit, more than 90% of the accounts can be free. So free checking, well within the reach of everyone. I think, you know, start with, you know, the account and the bank that you're currently at. Make sure you're in the right account for your needs. See if there's something you can sign up for, like direct deposit, that can get the monthly fee waived. And if that doesn't cut it, shop around. Like we said, you know, over 40% of banks offer a standalone free checking account, and it's double that at credit unions. It's over 80%. So something that's well within the reach of everyone.
Are there still interest-paying checking accounts out there, Greg, and are any of them worth the time?
By and large, they're not. Yes, they still exist. And, you know, with isolated exceptions, you know, you can characterize interest checking accounts as, you know, having much higher fees, much higher balance requirements to avoid the fees, and very little in the way of interest earnings. It's just not an efficient use of cash. You know, for most people, you're better off going with the non-interest account, get that free account, and then rather than strand a whole bunch of extra money in your checking account to avoid a fee, you can push that money over into your online savings account where you're going to earn a better return. So, you know, the isolated exceptions that we see are what are often called rewards checking accounts. A lot of smaller community banks and credit unions offer these. And basically, they'll pay you a very attractive rate of interest, provided that you meet certain requirements every month, using your debit card a dozen times, sign up for electronic statements, using bill pay, those kind of things. If you clear those hurdles every month, you know, they'll pay you 2 or 2.5% on your interest or on your balance in that interest checking account.
You know, I remember a time when interest bearing savings accounts were a big deal as well. Are we ever going to get back to those days where we could put money in a savings account and actually make some money on it?
Well, I think we're finally, you know, getting to the point where if you shop around, your savings is in a position now where you can maintain your buying power. And that's the first time in more than a decade we've been able to say that. The top-yielding online savings accounts now yielding over 2%. At Bankrate.com, we've got a list of the top-yielding accounts. They top out around 2.25%. They're available nationwide. Some of them have no minimum deposit. So literally everybody can take advantage of this. But you got to shop around. I mean, if you're just leaving your money sit at the same bank you've always been with, you know, a lot of banks are still pretty stingy with their payouts on savings accounts. You may be earning a fraction of 1%. And what you're doing is leaving money on the table because you can be earning a higher rate of return. And listen, 2.25% is not going to blow anybody's hair back. But here's why that's an important point is the Fed's inflation target is 2%. So that's really the bogey we've got to be aiming for if we want to preserve our buying power over time.
Greg, as we watch what the Fed is going to do here moving forward, all indications are that we'll see another, perhaps another interest rate in December. It's been kind of a rough week on Wall Street. What are your thoughts about what we saw this week and what may be coming?
Well, kind of a predictable temper tantrum on the part of investors, you know, in this recognition of the fact that interest rates are going up. You know, the bond market kind of got that memo last week. We saw long-term yields move up pretty noticeably. You know, this week the stock market reacting to that. You know, low interest rates have been, you know, a big ingredient to this bull market that's gone on for 9.5 years. And so now with interest rates going up, you know, investors are kind of, they're kind of looking down the road and, you know, worrying, is this something that's going to slow economic growth? Is this going to impact corporate earnings? And, you know, those that have been most susceptible this week have been those high octane, high growth stocks that have high valuations in a higher interest rate world. You know, all of a sudden investors start to question the price they're paying.
All right. Greg, always good to chat with you. Great information this morning.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right. Greg McBride over at Bankrate.com. You can find more at Bankrate.com. And make sure you follow Greg on Twitter as well. Good information there at Bankrate Greg.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures up 194. NASDAQ futures up 108. S&P futures up about 25. Everything up close to a percent. On the NASDAQ, a percent and a half. Let's find out more about agriculture and commodities this morning. Orion Samuelson is with us. Orion, we had a rough day on Wall Street for some of the markets, the Dow, the NASDAQ, S&P. How was it in some of the commodity markets?
Well, not as bad as some people expected. Yesterday was October crop report day. Corn futures gained more than a percent, hitting a seven-week high after that report was issued yesterday because the department unexpectedly cut its yield forecast for the 2018 crop and leaving the stocks of corn lower than anticipated. Soybeans, well, they moved higher with the corn crop. And the concern, Steve, is growing over the weather because we've had rains now that have kept combines parked for probably a week and not that good a forecast. So we're going to be watching that more than anything else because we always do in agriculture watch the weather and it seems to straighten out so that we get things done. But it's a tough time right now trying to get harvest done and hopefully we don't get any high winds because that would flatten the crop and make it very difficult. Meanwhile, we're looking at the hurricane areas, and the cotton crop in North Carolina, I think, reduced a third because of Hurricane Florence. And Max Armstrong, who lives in North Carolina, talked to a tobacco farmer there who had a 750-acre field of tobacco totally flattened. Crop was totally gone.
Yeah, I saw another area that I think it was a cotton farmer, and everything was gone there as well.
Yep.
Hopefully this is the last hurricane for a while.
Boy, I hope so. Although we talked to Greg Soldier, who is our agricultural meteorologist on the TV show, and he said there are still some tropical depressions out there that could or could not turn into a stronger storm than a tropical depression. And the interesting thing is, too, on the hurricane season, we've had several of them in the Pacific that have moved into Baja, California, and into Arizona, and there's another one headed that way into the southwest part of the country. So, and they grow a lot of cotton in Arizona, and so the crop on both ends of the country in a little bit of danger. The cattle market, we've seen there the beef output for the country at 26.9 billion pounds, and that would be down from six tenths of a percent from the September estimate. Fed cattle in Texas and Kansas that we watch carefully to get an idea of what futures will do traded at $111 per hundredweight in the cash market yesterday, and that was steady with the last 2 weeks. So that was the other surprise in that October report yesterday. USDA dropped its usage estimate for livestock feeding. And that kind of came as a surprise because we've got big numbers of cattle and big numbers of hogs. And I think many of the traders were expecting the feed usage to change in their favor, and it didn't. So a lot going on right now besides trying to get that combine rolling.
What can we expect tomorrow on the morning show?
Well, we're going to talk to Jim Fazell. We're getting to the end of the season, but he's going to share some thoughts on what else we need to do to get ready for winter. And, of course, as he said last week, make sure your trees are fully watered and have all the moisture they need. And we're also going to talk about the Farm Bill. We're still waiting for a Farm Bill. And Congressman Gosar, Paul Gosar of Arizona, chatted with me about that a couple of weeks ago and his concern that we don't have a Farm Bill. So we'll talk more about that tomorrow.
All right, great. Orion, have a great weekend.
You too, my friend.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Again, the morning show at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, October the 12th. A couple of things on the calendar this morning. Again, we'll get a report on consumer sentiment. We'll also see import and export prices. A couple of Fed speakers, Charles Evans out there, Rafael Bostic as well. On the earnings calendar, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, all reporting earnings today. Wells Fargo stock is up almost 1.5% in the pre-market ahead of results. Citigroup up as well. JP Morgan stock higher as well. So expecting good things from those earnings reports today from the banks. Also, as I mentioned, that October report of consumer sentiment is something that we'll be watching as we all have eyes on the market, the larger market today, as we've seen gains and some green this morning, finally heading to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning.